it's a scientific effort to measure something we're not sure even exists. We're looking at data from instruments that have in the laboratory shown very slight changes when people have intentions to change the way they behave. They're called random event generators or random number generators. We use these instruments in a context that we think might possibly show a reaction when very large numbers of people respond, especially emotionally, to some major event in the world. We have some evidence that this happens, and we have a great deal to learn.
And, I mean, not getting too technical on this, but what are they actually trying to pick up?
Yes, we have a network with nowadays about 55 or 60 of these devices, and in a sense, they aren't so much picking up something as creating a sequence of what should be random numbers, completely unpredictable numbers. And our scientific tests simply look at this sequence to find out if it remains random or if instead it shows patterns when something is happening that we hypothesize could affect such random sequences. So in other words, we're, in a sense, measuring the appearance of patterns where there shouldn't be any.
So if I had one of these here with me now, how would it be generating its numbers here?
Every second, it would produce 200 bits. That's ones and zeros, but it's the equivalent of flipping 200 coins electronically and very fast. So each second, it would produce a number that amounts to counting the number of heads. So it would be about 100, maybe 92, maybe 113, more often quite close to 100.
And is it, what's the actual object? Is it something attached to my computer, or what exactly is it?
Yes, well, the ones that we have, two different ones, actually three, but most of the generators are of one of two types. They're both very small objects. You can easily hold it in the palm of your hand. They use diodes or transistors to which are in a circuit that produces a completely unpredictable flow of electrons, which means a completely unpredictable amount of voltage. And we sample that at regular intervals, 1,000 times a second, roughly, and we ask whether the voltage that we see is above or below its expected value, and that we count as a head or a tail, so to speak. So it's a little device, maybe 2 or 3 inches long and a couple of inches wide, connected by a cable to the serial port, one of the communication ports of a computer. Then there's a program that runs on the computer that collects the data and eventually sends it to a server that's in Princeton.
So the theory is that if you can measure some kind of global consciousness and there is some kind of change in our collective consciousness, that's going to create in slightly different results.
I'm a little torn about saying we have a theory. It's just, it's more like a guess at this point.
Sure.
We're looking for evidence that we're not, as I mentioned at the very beginning, we're not really sure exists. And so we have a lot of work to do. The effect, if it exists at all, of a consciousness on our systems is pretty small. And it's kind of hard to be sure that you aren't mistaking some, oh, say, a physical effect for one that that we attribute to consciousness. But yes, our effort, in a certain sense, is conditioned on the idea that perhaps we do meld into a group when something grabs us emotionally and maybe intellectually. For example, when Princess Diana died, there was a tremendous outpouring of interest and, I guess one could say, shared emotion around the world. Millions of people were deeply affected, and they stopped thinking about their own concerns to some degree and instead joined with others in thinking about this particular event. Same sort of thing happened at other times during September 2001, September 11th. They were pretty sure our data showed a very powerful reflection of people's concern and shared emotional reaction around the world. And then there are happy occasions, too. Things like New Year's and various kinds of celebrations seem to gather people in large numbers to share a kind of state of consciousness.
So are you saying that at Princess Diana's death and on September the 11th, you measured something happening?
The Global Consciousness Project didn't exist yet at the time of Princess Diana's death, but we organized all the people that... colleagues who do this kind of research with random number generators that could do what we're now doing, namely produce a continuous sequence of numbers. I asked all of my friends to take data during the funeral ceremonies, and we had, I think, 12 or 14 separate traces of random numbers, and we again asked that very simple question: are these numbers random now, or do they show some pattern that is correlated with the events of the funeral cortege and the ceremonies in Westminster Cathedral? And what we found was that there was indeed a deviation, and that was one of the what we can think of as kind of prototype for the network that we now run continuously and have been running since 1998.
And have you seen anything similar to that since the project's been up and running?
Yes, quite a number of things. Not by any means all of the events that we choose to make to use for tests, but lots of them. Things like, well, the first event that occurred while we were, after we had begun this project, was the bombing of the embassies in Africa. It's so long ago now that many people have forgotten. But it was a very frightening thing, a kind of what I think of as tearing the social fabric. This is not supposed to happen. Embassies and diplomatic institutions are supposed to be safe from violence so that we can continue as a human species to communicate with each other. But so that showed a very big effect. And the beginning of the bombing in Kosovo, each of the five New Years that we have looked at so far has something unusual in one of the two measures that we use for looking at the data. So it doesn't always look exactly the same, but it's at least something seems to be unusual about the data during those times. In India, there's a celebration called the Kumbh Mela, which occurs when people gather in millions to bathe in the Ganges, several organized meditations, and of course, I think the strongest event that we've looked at and the clearest in terms of patterns showing up in the data was September 11th and the terrorist attacks in Washington and New York.
So the project was up and running at that point?
It has been up and running since 1998.
Right. So what exactly did you notice around September the 11th?
Because that was a big event, we did a tremendous amount of exploration in addition to this sort of formal predictions that are made without knowing what the data look like. What we find is that the mean value, the kind of average output of these devices across the whole world, changed and became a little bit, I guess, it was amplified, you might say, and produced a deviation from what's expected, a kind of departure from normal behavior that lasted for 2 days, beginning around the time of the bombing. That's one thing. Another is the numbers that we record occur in a kind of distribution. Not lots of people know about the bell curve, a kind of, the values that are most often occur are close to the average, but there are some that are more extreme, either higher or lower than the average. So the spread or the width of that distribution is something we also look at. That it's called the variance. That variance changed radically on September 11th. It went very high, very big and wide for several hours, beginning actually before the first plane hit the trade towers, and it continued to be unusually big for several hours and then reversed direction and became unusually small, so that there's a, if you look at a graph of the, that particular measure on that day, it's there's a huge, huge peak that's unique in our database. There are other measures too. The one of the defining qualities of a random sequence is that there isn't any connection from one moment to the next or one trial to the next. On September 11th, there is a highly significant what's called autocorrelation, a linkage from one moment to the next. That's something that shouldn't happen in random data, and when it does, it indicates that the data have been pushed, so to speak, by some influence to be different from their normal behavior.
Well, that, I mean, assuming that you've all measured it accurately and you seem to sound like you'll know what you're doing, I appreciate how you're being a cautious scientist, but that sounds quite conclusive to me, what you've just described.
When I look at it, I came into this business advertising myself as 100% skeptical and 100% open-minded and not too good at arithmetic, if you see what I mean.
Right.
I'm still a kind of skeptical scientist, and so I, as you note, I am fairly cautious. I don't want to overinterpret these things, and I do want to exclude, for example, people say, what about the fact that there was a tremendous electromagnetic fluctuation because the electrical grid was under attack and being destroyed in Lower Manhattan? What about all the cell phones? People were trying to connect with each other and so on. And so those are reasonable questions. Maybe those kinds of things change the way our random generators work. We design them and calibrate them to be sure they aren't affected by such things. But beyond that, we also really have to do direct tests. So we asked of the data, is there a change from daytime to nighttime, a diurnal variation, which you would expect if electromagnetic or electrical grid usage affects our machines? That it turns out there isn't any correspondence at all with the diurnal variation in electrical usage and electromagnetic field strength. So we can, I think, reasonably exclude such physical effects. Even so, maybe there's something hidden, maybe there's some other kind of force. Still, to respond responsibly to your question, I find that very convincing, very persuasive also. The data from September 11th are so remarkably different from what you expect of random data, that we have to say there's a pattern there which shouldn't be there.
The thing I'm not still totally clear on is, let's assume there is something there. Let's go back to September the 11th. Let's assume it did pick something up. I'm still not totally clear what your little detectors, I know they're not really detectors, but your little detectors, what are they actually noticing, detecting, whatever the word is?
Right. you're also you're being infected by my scientific caution. Well, it's hard to say for sure. What we measure is correlation, and in a certain sense, what that amounts to is information, a change in the nature of the information that defines the system we're looking at. So, to be as direct as I can about it, I think the best candidate for what we're picking up or capturing is a change in the information structure of the system we're looking at. Put more simply, I think there may be a transfer of information from what we can think of as consciousness, human global scale consciousness, a transfer of information from consciousness to physical systems, to change the way those physical systems appear in our measurements, which really are a little bit like counting. Could that help a little?
Yeah. Could we define it as kind of energy? Is it a form of, if there is a global consciousness, is it a form of energy that's being put out?
I'm a little cautious about the word energy, because energy means, in most people's vocabulary, something like electromagnetic energy or heat or light, and we don't have any of those things. We have no indication that there is energy at that level. Scientifically, I think it's probably safer to say something which also nobody knows much about, to say that we're looking at information fields. Just as you can have an electromagnetic field, I think in principle we can have an information field, and I believe it's that which changes very slightly when, and in a way that somehow is registered in our network of random event detectors. If an information field exists, then human consciousness, which is, one might argue, a source of information, a kind of generator of information that can become part of this field, the information field informed by the thoughts, feelings, emotions of human consciousness changes, and if it then is, so to speak, measured by our random event generator system, then we do have a correlation. So, again, trying to go back to a simpler form of this, I think there might be something like an information field which carries changes in the way our human consciousness is operating over into physical systems.
Now, if people go onto your website and they click on the net status page, and then they go to, I think it's the real-time display page, they can actually see a graphic representation of what you're measuring, but we can also hear it as well, and I'm just going to play a little bit of that right now. So, Roger, what exactly is that that we're hearing?
Each of the 50 or so what we call eggs, these devices around the world, produces every second a number. We measure the departure or the deviation of that number from what's expected, namely 100. So, and we convert that into a squared deviation, a sort of magnitude, and then play sounds which correspond to levels of this or of magnitude. In other words, we play sounds corresponding, there are actually three of them, to a modest departure, a pretty good-sized departure, and a huge departure from expectation. The three sounds are like the wood blocks and that sort of bell-like dinging, and once in a while, when a single egg out there in the world someplace has a very big deviation, you'll hear a huge gonging sound, which I kind of like hearing those once in a while. They don't necessarily mean that something major is happening in the world. What that display shows is the ongoing behavior of a random system for the most part. When something big goes on in the world, those individual devices being now represented by little blocks of color and the sound, they become coordinated in some way. They become correlated so that so many of them are doing the same kind of thing that our eventual calculations will show a trend, and they, since events take time to occur in the world, they have to be sort of coordinated over lengthy periods of time, many minutes or maybe even hours, and of course our little display is showing just this moment.
And is it, we're measuring here global consciousness, is it a coincidence that the core sound that I first heard when I came on here and is still there, to me, is a heartbeat?
Well, no, it's not a coincidence. It's By the way, I didn't design this. Dick Bierman, who is a physicist in Amsterdam, originally designed it, and three different programmers have contributed to its development, and so the display now is the work of several people. But to respond to your question, the heartbeat really, I think, represents something that I should have put into the conversation earlier. We're calling this project a global consciousness project, but in a certain sense it seems more and more clear that there has to be something like compassion or love or some kind of heart-oriented aspect to the situation for our network to respond. In other words, we could, in a certain sense, think of it as the global emotional network.
Is what you're picking up geographical? In other words, again, with September the 11th, do you pick up different measurements around New York than, say, in Europe?
It's a good question, and we have a very, very tentative answer. Many people who do this kind of research think of the effect as what's called non-local, meaning that it would be as expected to be as big 1,000 miles away as 10 miles away. But in fact, when we do the separations, we find that the size of the effect on the east from on the devices that are on the East Coast in the U.S. is a little bit bigger, not significantly bigger, but it's a little bigger than in the middle of the country or the West Coast, and also a little bit bigger than in Europe. So there's there may be a kind of spatial decline. Even so, it's by no means the case that only the nearby eggs respond. We have very good evidence that that's not the case, that the effect may be very profound on devices that are halfway around the world.
I tell you what, I think the most interesting thing you've said is, there was a little throwaway line when you were talking about September the 11th. You said that you started measuring these differences, these fluctuations, I think you said several hours before the first plane hit. What on earth would be the explanation for that?
That's a question a lot of us ask. There are, I think, a number of possibilities. The two primary ones, the most likely things in my mind, are one, that there was a very powerfully engaged group of perhaps 50 or maybe 100 people in the terrorist organizations who knew exactly what was going on, and some 20 or 25 of them committing themselves to their, you know, religious task ahead and doing prayers and so forth, probably about the time 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning while they were getting ready to die. Now, I don't believe that is necessarily the reason the data started changing then. It's just one of the possibilities. What seems to me, and this is hard for most of us to believe in, it seems to me possible that there is a kind of premonitory quality to the actions of consciousness. We sometimes have premonitions and precognitions that pan out. It may be that if there is such a thing as a global consciousness, it could respond to its future. So the answer to the question is I don't know, but these are the speculations that come most easily to mind.
Now, if you are measuring consciousness, and forget all your scientific caution for a minute, if you've actually found a way of measuring this, what does this mean for us as humans?
My feeling is that we, as humans, have a lot of important work to do as a kind of potential intelligent coding for the Earth. We're not doing as well as we might. We need to evolve, and I think very quickly, in order to even survive as in pleasant and reasonable kinds of societies, but more especially in order to evolve in the direction of what appears to be our potential to be an intelligent layer, a kind of cooperative organism as a whole on the Earth. Put more simply, I think our that the indications of this kind of interconnection that we're seeing in our data, that those are just very slight, faint glimmerings of the potential that we have for being a kind of integrated population of the Earth. We don't have to all be have one government, but we ought to have one kind of understanding that the Earth isn't really big enough for us to keep devastating, you know, damaging our home.
And are you being taken, you know, seriously by anyone of, I don't know, importance, of, by governments or anything like that?
Well, I don't know. Probably, I haven't heard anybody in Washington taking me seriously, other than a few individuals. But I find it very heartening that a lot of people out in the world, regular people, in large part, but also some very, you know, just very nice people, creative, thoughtful, intelligent people, are persuaded that well, it's a good idea to think about these problems. I mean, this is one of 100 paths that you can find by a quick search on what's happening in you know, creative thought in the world. There, sometimes I think of what we're doing in this Global Consciousness Project as a rivulet, the sort of tiny trickle that's you know, heading downhill by way of gravity, and about to meet with another trickle, another rivulet, and the two will join a third and become a kind of tiny little stream. The streams will come together and become a river that will actually get to the sea sometime. So, big, a lot of words, sort of metaphorically, I'm thinking that we have a small contribution to make, which, along with others, will lead people to be more conscious of their potential and their responsibility as human beings.
And Roger, when will you get to the point where you will be able to say, well, I guess to fellow scientists, perhaps your harshest judges of all, you know, we have something really measurable here that proves something.
We have already published in the Foundations of Physics, which went an article that went through lots of review. We published in Journal of Scientific Exploration and a couple of other more specialized journals. But I think maybe another answer to your, or a kind of answer to your question about when, is sometime late next year. We are beginning a very deep, intensive analytical program, which I think should give us a pretty clear handle. And if, to the extent there are real patterns and structures, as I've mentioned before, in the data, we'll know that so well by the end of this analytic phase that we'll, I think, be able to say with some confidence to anybody who will take a moment from their own busy lives to listen that it's worth a scientific look.
And do you want to just mention the website again so people can go and have a look for themselves?
Right. It's http://noosphere. I'll spell that. NOOSPHERE dot Princeton, PRINCETON dot EDU.
Who do you know who would be interested in what you've just heard? Email them now and tell them the leading edge of human excellence is at planetearthradio.com.